And the weather today, fairly consistent. Highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. A mostly dry and bright day, chilly, with the possibility of some light rain in the afternoon.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yay! And Gabriella is now all set, ready to go. So what is Frodo's condition, please, Gabriella?
Both eyes shut, so asleep.
Ah, both eyes shut. Could be astral travelling.
And his tongue out.
Really?
Yeah.
What a wonderful, charming, kind of male thing that actually is. Is he drooling?
Possibly.
Exactly. He's probably had a heck of a time. We obviously have wrapped up the fourth International Gibraltarian Literary Festival. So what's been happening this week? Is it a case of we're all excited about Bonfire Night, or is it a case of, no, on that rock, any kind of burning of effigies is going to be considered bad taste?
We don't celebrate November 5th that much. We are a Catholic.
Exactly. Well, that's why I said, so, you know, bad taste, let's face it, you know.
We do a bonfire. Yeah. We do a bonfire for the past couple of years.
You just don't chuck people on it, which is important.
But I think losing the message as such of what bonfire night means.
Yeah,
but we do a small one. But it's not half as celebrated as it is in the UK, from what I remember.
Well, what I have to point out as well, Gabriella, yet again, is if you have any friends of the furry nature, and I'm thinking about Frodo and other cats and dogs that might be around here, for goodness sake, make sure they're safe and secure. I was thinking about the advice we gave last night with Hannah Brown, who actually said, well, just cuddle your pet. Actually, cuddling can cause pets to be stressful as well. So, sometimes you just need to sort of just let them sort of be calm and secure in their own way. You don't want Frodo suddenly panicked with loud bangs and sparkles and things going off. It's not good for their nerves.
Yeah, he usually sleeps through it on New Year's.
Why are we surprised?
He sleeps through everything. He can sleep through a storm. He can sleep through it all. Last New Year's,
is he still alive?
There was a firework right outside my house. Someone set a firework right outside my house, and he was asleep. He kind of opened his eyes, made like a little grunt noise, like, how dare something wake me up? And then went back to sleep, so he doesn't really have that issue, which I'm really lucky about. He sleeps through everything. He's like a rock.
Well, I mean, this is true, Ben, because as we know, you can indeed just fall asleep, literally.
I can. I have that skill. I've been possessed from such a young age.
It's
just that I thought dogs had to always, they're meant to be more aware than we are, but he seems not to even care.
Well, clearly we need to bring in the pet psychologists and a whole heap of other folk to address that whole system. Meanwhile, what else have you been getting up to? I mean, is it a case of you've had... I mean, was Halloween richly celebrated? Were there ghosts and ghoulies and pumpkin heads around Halloween? Or once again, was it a case of, no, we're waiting for Thanksgiving to celebrate the American Thanksgiving Festival?
We do not celebrate Thanksgiving at all.
No.
But we do Halloween. So we did celebrate Halloween, had two trick-or-treaters at my door. So
and what did you provide for them, if we can ask? What did you give them a treat or a trick? What was your official sort of line on this?
It was like mini chocolates.
Mini chocolates.
So, and Frodo welcomed them at the door wearing a Stitch costume. So
And what costume was he wearing?
Stitch from Lilo and Stitch.
Right.
Disney.
Stitch. Stitch.
Little blue character.
When she said Stitch costume, I thought, well, obviously there's Stitch and Dahl's sort of routine. Yes, Lilo and Stitch, Lilo and Stitch. Yeah. We won't go into Hawaii. That's for another Hawaiian correspondent time, etc. Splendid. Brilliant. Well, I think we've set that particular scene perfectly. Ben, any thoughts or questions for yourself?
I guess...
No, then.
No, but I'm trying to think. Because I was thinking the bonfire theme, and then I was thinking, I don't know, is there any way you're going to be particularly celebrating it at all? And
when's the last time, Gabriella, you saw Pinocchio?
What, on the television?
Well, just anywhere, really. You could have been wandering through the streets of Gibraltar.
I probably haven't seen it for... well, quite a few years.
Jasmine Vardaman, who has been artistic director of her own company since 1997, also associate artist of Sadler's Wells, is bringing a wonderful dance version of Pinocchio to the Lincoln Performing Arts Theatre in a couple of weeks' time. So Pinocchio done a la dancers with Jasmine Vardaman is something we can look forward to and will do as the program proceeds. It's interesting stuff there. And did you also ever go up to Scarborough at all in your life in Lincolnshire or indeed in Britain, Gabriella? Or is Scarborough a name that might as well be Des Moines, Iowa, as far as you're concerned?
I've heard of Scarborough, but I never went to Scarborough.
There's a reason to go in 2017 because Sci-Fi Scarborough will be taking place there. And Steve Dickinson, who was due to join us a couple of weeks ago, but he overslept and slept through the alarm clock. What is it with these hibernating scenarios here? I mean, you know, you've got to sort of keep those energies going. You know, it's not good. I know we've heard recently the weather forecast that suggests we could be in for a long, hard winter, primarily because we had such a dry October, and apparently the Arctic winds are sort of shifting position and so on, but yeah, you've got to keep going. That's the important thing. Otherwise, you just cease to be. Gabriella, it's been extraordinary, is all I can say. It's been an extraordinary treat. Hannah Brown, clearly her alarm clock hasn't quite worked. She did say last night she should be here, but, you know, she could have overslept and so on.
You have to give it 10 minutes or so, I think.
It's important. It's important. But, Ben, would you like to put those last two interrogatives to our Gibraltarian correspondent who has alerted us to the excitement of Frodo when he was conscious wearing a Stitch costume, the rest of the time, sleep with tongue hanging out.
All right, Gabriella, have you enjoyed your 10 o'clock living with us this morning?
Yeah, definitely.
Lovely. And will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, I will be.
Fantastic.
I like the way you said telephonic there, Ben. It really kind of sounded as it was sort of...
Telephonic.
It was all great stuff. It's marvellous. Anyway, this one is for Frodo. Menace, graphic nudity, and language. See, that woke you up. An R rating, which is curiously what has been granted to one of Richard Fitzwilliam's movies this morning that he's going to be reviewing for us. Isn't that exciting, Ben?
It is. Very unique.
Precisely. But it's not Doctor Strange because that's coming next week. Strange in many ways and all sorts of other routines, together with another Amy Adams classic. But Amy Adams is in one of the aforementioned films that you're going to be focusing on, which I believe has all got to do with nighttime things and mammalian characteristics and folk who actually do their own stuff, and all about a divorced couple who discover dark truths about each other and themselves. Is that...
Oh, that is very, very true. But I must remind you, Tom Ford, firstly, who directs this movie, I mean, this is his second. His first, A Single Man, was, I thought, absolutely superb. And Colin Firth, especially in that scene you will recall, where he hears of his partner's death, I mean, on the telephone. It's really remarkable acting. Nicholas Holt, too. So Ford's debut was most impressive, and scandalously it was nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. But what will happen, I wonder, with Nocturnal Animals? I mean, this is mesmerizing because it's an emotional it's an emotional tour de force. We get an insight into the emotional state of Susan, played by Amy Adams. It's adapted from a novel by Austin Wright, and it's the structure, the narrative structure of this film that fascinated me, because you will never see opening credits like the ones that appear here. We see what she is portraying.
It's just folk who are a little bit overweight, engaging in all sorts of strange
activities. Let us wait for a shock, a visual.
Okay, okay.
You will get as a shock. But it's in a Los Angeles gallery. She owns it. She's sold her soul. And she's a socialite as well, and her husband Hutton, played by Armie Hammer, often away. They've got financial difficulties. She's pretty lonely. And then she receives an unsolicited novel. It's from her former husband, Edward. He's dedicated it to her. She starts to read it. And this is what's extraordinary. The movie tells both the current story and the fact that the novel comes alive and what happens, which is, putting it mildly, dramatic and, I can only say, terrifying. It's about a character, Tony, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who actually plays Edward in flashback scenes because she re-examines her life and reads the book, and the book comes alive, and then there's what's happening currently. He and his family experience a terrifying ordeal at the hands of joyriders. It begins on a Texas motorway, and the consequences involve police investigation. Detective Bobby Andes, played by Michael Shannon, is in charge of it. Now, it's the narrative structure of this movie that absolutely fascinated me, and also the colors. It's told partly in flashback. She re-examines her life as she reads this book, and we can see the way her patrician and somewhat controlled environment when she was young. Her mother, terrifying performance by Laura Linney, as the numbers of strings of pearls only equaled by her bigotry. She's basically, owing to what's happened, she deserted Edward. He's written a book. He features certain characters. They have a resemblance to, well, you'll find out, at least I hope you will, because this is it's a really challenging film. It's certainly got nudity, it's got violence, but my goodness me, it has got a powerful impact. And it's the way Amy Adams portrays this character that's also fascinating, because she's very, very expressive. It's a sublime performance. You could lose sympathy for her as we see how she's become the person she has, and how also does she cope in running a gallery with the emotional pressures upon her. So this is somebody starting to crack, and it's somebody re-examining their life, and it has this perverse beauty, and it has stunning visuals. So what we see may shock, but it's also the beauty of the way Ford is able to put these images in front of us. So this is a challenging movie. I challenge you to enjoy it.
In the words of Will Lawrence for Empire magazine, Ford's artfully composed and emotionally clever noir is well-paced and, in stark contrast to the naked flesh that opens the film, never ever sags.
How right you are. In fact, he's written it well, and Ford has directed it with panache. It is a superb performance by Amy Adams. Yes, indeed, there are two Amy Adams films to enjoy. I was at the press conference for
We do Arrival next week. We'll do Arrival next week, so hold fire on that one. And after all, after she was Lois Lane in, of course, the Superman movies and the Princess in Enchanted, what's not to appreciate about Amy Adams? But Ben, would you go and check out Nocturnal Animals?
I certainly would. I think the cast, I think, is amazing in it, but as well as that, obviously, it's a Tom Ford film. And you say it was R-rated, this one?
Well, that means 18, really. Actually, yeah. In Britain, it's got a 15 certificate. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was going to say. Well, if it was R-rated, I mean, to be honest, any R-rated film, I think it's talent just to be able to get a trailer together which isn't explicit.
Whoa, there are. It's, I mean, you know, our cousins over the sea in the pond there.
Oh, this is
they
it.
They have different sort of values and views on that basis. We're so European.
I would see it, though. I definitely would see it, I think.
Well, there we are. And, of course, Tom Ford is a designer. Remember, of course, what he did in A Single Man, as you rightly said, Richard, when he found beauty in the bottom of a sock drawer. Oh, well.
Oh, it's... but this is extraordinary, because you're seeing a movie. It works on several levels. The narrative structure is extraordinary. And visually, this has got to make that... Well, it's going to be up to 10 now, the nominations for Best Picture at the Oscars. It must.
Well, there we are. The Richard Fitzwilliam seal of approval. What happens when you have a story of a couple whose love is tested to its limit after their perfect life falls apart in a single moment? Could it be starfish?
It could be, because the starfish, when it loses limbs, can grow them back again. And therefore, this is it's a title, and it's based on a true story. And the story is absolutely shocking, because it introduced me to sepsis, which I have to confess I knew little about. And it's a film which is well acted. Tom Ray, played by Tom Riley, a loving father. His wife, Nicola, played by Joanne Froggatt, expecting a second child. And he suddenly gets this terrible attack, and the movie is about his courage and his resourcefulness, and the performances are good, but it's the story that really it shakes you. It's a tough movie to watch, that must be said, and you know, be warned. And when you're a mother and carer, you can see the pressures that Nicola is under, and also they move into her mother's home. There's Jean, played by Michelle Dutrice, and very well. It's got touching moments. It's a movie you could say, and one or two have, that this is a movie for television, but I think it works because director-writer Bill Clark has found a subject and he's found a cast that are certainly, I think, extremely well chosen. Not perhaps a dramatic movie in the conventional sense. Set in Rutland, it just shows you what can happen, and I'm shocked that there are so many cases of sepsis in Britain, and this is a movie that really does push its point, because what happens is when you're struck, all the parts of the body which are affected have to be removed, so you lose
your
arm.
You have a facially scarred double amputee. It's not good news at all.
You might say that, and I would agree with you.
Indeed, and again,
movie, but it is well done.
Scripting apparently patchy, with one politicised pitch feeling particularly awkward, but poignant moments abound. There we are. Starfish. Ben, what's your view? Starfish, would you be checking it out?
I think that'd be a very tough watch.
It is.
In terms of emotions, definitely. And I think what makes it more poignant is the fact is it's a true story. And I think as well, many people obviously can relate to it, but it's one of those things which never gets discussed, you never see discussed. It's a case of, I think it would raise awareness, certainly.
It does, and if you see movies reminding me of Javier Bardem in The Sea Inside, or Matthew Amalric in The Diving Bell and The Butterfly, I mean, those are movies which had a cast that is better known and probably would have far wider international circulation. But I mean, it's this horrifying thing that could suddenly happen to you. I mean, it really does shock.
Now, I gather, Richard, apart from the fact that you've given thumbs up to two movies again, so it's 100% rate on this particular factor, and with next week Arrival and Doctor Strange coming through, Doctor Strange outstanding, well worth going to see. I really thought he'd be talking about it this week, but, you know, it'll come. We've also got news that earlier this week, Richard was doing a live broadcast of the ceremonial welcome to the Colombian state visit.
One of those historic moments, because there have been close ties between Britain and Colombia at the time of Simon Bolivar, of course, who was the great figure linked to independence, and also recently in Colombia, a 52-year-long civil war, which is the world's longest, and it's between the government forces and a guerrilla grouping under FARC, or called FARC, and also the drug trafficking problem there is pretty terrifying. And Britain has provided, especially with the links, and this is in fact President Santos and his wife are in Northern Ireland today in the third day of the visit. It's the British experience in Northern Ireland that has provided a great deal of advice and help, and also diplomatic help at the United Nations, to help Colombia in this tricky time. The similarities, President Santos won the Nobel Prize for Peace, but it must be mentioned that the similarities between Britain and Colombia, I mean, it's not direct, but the result of this peace process was put, because there is a ceasefire now and it is holding, to the Colombian people in a staggering result. Only 38% voted when it was expected in the polls that nearly two-thirds would approve it. By a tiny majority, they rejected it because of what it offered to the guerrillas. And one has to bear in mind 220,000 people have died, millions displaced over the years. And of course, we had our Brexit vote here, so the polls were wrong there too. So there were similarities, and I was watching the state banquet, and it does show what with the speeches, how heartfelt the links between the two countries are. The ceremonial arrival, the greeting on horse guards, the carriage procession, these are always very popular aspects of it, and the meeting of politicians with politicians, the visit to the Palace of Westminster, also to the laying a wreath on the grave of the unknown warrior at Westminster Abbey. It's been very, very well handled. Hasn't received much publicity in the press because, of course, we have the American election. There's the attack on Mosul.
There's an election in America, Richard. Good grief.
Thing that I've read. Can you confirm it?
Yeah, sometimes the news that comes through on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition is just astounding. Never mind.
You're quite right.
Great stuff. On the reverse of this month's Empire magazine and discussing Nocturnal, a little reminder of Richard's agreement there. The winner, of course, of the Grand Jury Prize at the Venice Film Festival are the words extraordinary, intoxicating, electrifying, mesmerising and exquisite. That's on the back of Empire. Right on the back of that, we have a fantastic advertisement for a sensational university which actually talks about fantastic education and where to find it. Where can you actually find that fantastic education and where to find it? Please, Ben, would you like to just share that word? It's the University of
Lincoln.
There you are.
On the back page, back inside page of Empire magazine.
Exactly.
That's incredible.
I just wanted to share that sort of happiness at once.
I certainly go along with the Empire critic because, I mean, it mesmerized me. The visuals are truly fantastic. But as I say, I mean, anyone who doesn't find this narrative structure riveting, I have to say, it really does challenge you. And you're drawn into worlds that are deeply, deeply disturbing. But it's a triumph of Amy Adams's performance that soulless and materialistic her life may be, but she attracts a good deal of sympathy. It's not just her physical appearance. Well, there's a certain possibility there, or not, of some form of redemption, or not.
There are always possibilities.
Richard,
we came in with Amy, we went out with Amy, we'll be back with Amy next week.
Back with Amy.
Exactly.
We will arrive
we'll
with Amy.
Exactly. It'd be tremendous. And we've just been listening to Michael Giacchino's Ancient Sorcerer's Line from Doctor Strange. Ben,
shall be with him too.
Would you like to tell Richard or share those last two questions with Richard, please?
Richard, have you enjoyed your 10-foot link with us this morning?
Absolutely.
Lovely. And will you be joining us again soon?
I certainly will. And next week,
for a bit more Amy.
Time to touch on the new production of No Man's Land.
I think so.
Is that include Amy?
That's with Patrick Stewart. Ian McKellen.
No.
You got Jean-Luc Picard, Charles Xavier, and Magneto all in the same movie.
We need an Amy show. We need an Amy show.
An Amy show is terrific. She is.
Godliness, and it would seem that in certain instances, particularly automobiles, that's not necessarily being adhered to, or maybe they're just devils on the roads. To address the shocking facts that some people's cars are packed with bacteria and things that they probably didn't realise were actually there in any way, shape or form, we're delighted to be able to welcome a young lady who's got over 25 years' experience as an environmental health practitioner. She's a general all-round superlative visiting professor of environmental health at the University of Salford and Professor Sorial Fellow
Fellow of the Royal Society for Public Health. It's the one and only Dr. Lisa Ackerley. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Good to connect with your good self, and I trust the studio is nice and clean at present.
I haven't tested it yet, but I hope so.
Okay. Let's talk about this car scenario, though, because this was something which, I mean, I must admit that, you know, sometimes the hoovering out, the cleaning of the car, it probably goes to the last in the list of things to do. But it does seem as though bacteria are using our cars and automobiles as a breeding ground.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think we tend to spend an awful lot of time actually cleaning the outside of the car, but don't think about what's going on the inside. And the studies that were carried out, first one was from the University of Salford, and they actually did some swabbing. So they got their special suits on and they swabbed various parts of the car, such as the handbrake and the console area. And then another study was done to find out what people actually think about the hygiene of their car. And that was done by cellcar.co.uk. And they interviewed 2,000 people. And what was really interesting is that this Salford University study found that some areas of the car were actually much dirtier than common things such as computer keyboards and smartphones. And yet people in the cell car study actually thought that those items would be, the car would be much cleaner than those items. Mm. So really we've got a sort of lack of awareness going on here. And I think people go into this little bubble when they get in their car and they think it's all beautiful and nice and safe because it's their car. But they don't realise what may actually be going on inside.
Well, certainly we've just come out of Halloween, and I suppose that if you don't want the Addams Family sort of list of bugs and strange things occurring, it's important to obviously clean your car fairly regularly.
That's right. And one of the things to think about is the journey of the germ, really. It's not just the journey of the car, but the journey of the germ. So think about all the things that could get into the car that could make you sick eventually or could make someone else sick. So, for example, the driver sneezing, coughing. I've seen people poking their noses when they're at traffic jams. All sorts of horrible habits actually put bacteria around the steering wheel and so on. That's probably OK if it's just you. But if you share the car, if it's a family car, then somebody else coming along will be picking those bacteria and viruses up, and they could infect themselves without realising. And the same thing is about people have a horrible habit of picking food up if it's dropped on the floor. Have you heard of the sort of 5-second rule?
Oh dear,
myth,
don't get me started on that one, Lisa. It's a whole new world.
Well, if you do that in your car, on those carpets that you know are full of mud, dog hair, everything else, then you could be ingesting an awful lot of horrible things.
So looking in terms of the overall sort of profile, I mean, clearly this is, it goes beyond simply saying, oh, we need a little bit of dirt to actually keep us healthy. You know, you've raised a number of serious issues there. Presumably, if you happen to be suffering from asthma and other sort of aspects, dust in cars could also create challenges.
Well, that's right. Dust, dog hair, you know, if you have allergies, then that's really bad. The theory that we need a little bit of dirt, well, yes, we need the good bacteria, but what we don't want is to ingest the bad ones or perhaps put a cold or flu virus into our body through inadvertently having it on our hands and then rubbing our faces, our eyes in particular. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing to do is just sort of think it through. How dirty is my car? Do I really want to eat something that's fallen off the floor or that's been on the seat? You know, and also what's happening to my hands afterwards if the car is absolutely filthy and you go inside and you're going to make a sandwich? Well, wash your hands first.
Absolutely. In terms of survival strategies and so on for the bacteria, they're pretty long-lasting fellows, basically. This is not just a case of saying, oh, it's all right, they'll be dead within too long.
No, that's true. I mean, a cold or flu virus can survive for up to around 48 hours. Other bacteria can survive a lot longer, and that could be particularly if the car is actually physically dirty as well. So if there's lots of food lurking about, then of course that gives bacteria something to munch on.
Will valeting effectively solve these problems, depending on obviously the depth of the valet service?
Well, yes, and the thing is that will actually also get rid of all the stale food, which can give a horrible smell. And it really amuses me when I go into a car and people have put these things up to mask the smell of the car, and I think, well, why don't you just clean the car and then you wouldn't need this sort of horrible full smell to mask it.
That is very true, of course. Having recently had an experience of the classic slight spillage of milk in a car, I've had to work through a whole process with respect to that. But I think it's moved now. I use the sort of chemical link of bicarbonate of soda and various other factors, and of course a good hoovering.
Yes.
Advise us to find out further information about this. Presumably one could always go to the hygienedoctor.co.uk.
Yes, you certainly can. I think I can feel a blog coming on, actually.
Well, absolutely. This is all great stuff. And in terms of, obviously, accessing those details, short advice, really, make sure your car is cleaned fairly frequently.
Absolutely. Don't get too hung up on it, but also think about that journey of the germ.
Lisa, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you good self today. As I say, clearly passionate about making a difference to public health by ensuring consumer hygiene issues are easy to understand. That's what you've just done. Lisa Ackerley, many thanks indeed, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future.
Hope so. Thank you.
The Journey of the Germ. Surely it's the title of your next book, Ian. The Journey
of
the Germ.
Yes, I picked up on that. That's a really good phrase.
Doubtless you were sharing with Ben Lewis the excitement and sheer joy of the proper side in Manchester as they had a fantastic 4-0 victory against West Bromwich Albion over the weekend and another 3-1 against a certain Barcelona side. So celebrate and rejoice. I know, Ben, obviously you're happy that Brighton have scored 5 as well.
Yep, 5-0 against Norwich, Ian.
That's great stuff.
Oh, yes, of course. That was a really good result, wasn't it? What was happening to Norwich?
I know. It was so shambolic for them on their part, but...
Was it?
Yeah.
Were you at the game, or you just sort
no,
of...
No. Well, because I'm in Lincoln, so it would be quite difficult to get back down to Brighton on the weekend. But
some people have done it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Alex was done for City. Yeah. I was expecting to see Alex on the pitch.
Back in the day.
No, but I did watch highlights, and I must say it was the defender that let Norwich down quite easily.
Really?
Yeah. Certainly. Although we are catching up with you very, very quickly.
We won, so you couldn't catch up. We played badly, apparently, and we were lucky to get a win, certainly, apparently.
Yeah, well, we're on your tail.
Well, as you know, I'm a great fan of Chris Hughton. I think he's one of the arguments for nice guys do count.
Oh, definitely. I think for him as well, maybe that win was a bit more poignant on the weekend. As a personal thing.
Yes, he was at Norwich, wasn't he?
Yeah. From what I've been told, he wasn't treated very, very well there either.
It happens in football,
obviously. Well, this is it, isn't it?
Well, unless, of course, you've got Mike Ashley in charge, in which case you can guarantee that you'll have good, friendly, cordial relations all the time, except with fans. Moving on from that point of view, doubtless you appreciate that...
He's got to get it in, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Ashley has reformed, I think.
Do you reckon the manager, the Newcastle manager, is he on a 0-hour contract at all, do you think?
I think he's... I don't know how long a contract he signed, I can't remember, but they want him so badly, they basically... had to sort of agree to his demands, and his demands was that the football club, for the first time in about 5 years, was run properly as a football club.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're getting people like Alan Pardew now coming out saying, "Wish he'd had the power that Benitez had had." He was overruled on certain things, and he's right to an extent. But I got no sympathy from him whatsoever, because he was just about dedicating every corner kick to Mike Ashley at one time.
Yeah. I think he
was unhappy, and he was obsequious to the owner rather than to the fans.
Alan Pardew, obsequious? Surely some mistake.
I think football nowadays...
Talking about our next England manager there, Ian.
It's ruled.
Yes, maybe.
Football is ruled by the man, not the managers, the chairmen and the owners nowadays.
The owners, yes, and not the owners now are foreign owners, so they've got a different culture.
Oh, is it? Exactly. And I think now it's a case of... I think some people are learning, particularly Mike Ashley, but it's the fact that the owners have got to take a step back and let the managers do everything for them.
I think he's realised, and he's investing money as well, because there's so much money in football. He knows he's got to get back to the Premiership, because that's where all the money is.
Exactly. And it does his company well, I suppose, in that respect.
Pardon?
I suppose it does his company that quite well in that respect, if he's got international
coverage. Yeah, I mean, well, of course, because he uses them as a vanguard for his product, of course.
Of course.
Anyway, enough of discussing the wise and wherefore.
Sorry, yeah.
I know it's a bit appropriate.
We'll continue on email.
I'd like to maintain Lincoln's first community radio station sort of focuses on global events, but not necessarily to the exclusion of matters, Lincoln. After the news, we will probably hear the following phrase mentioned at least once. I know. Probably expressed E-I-N-O when Kaylee Carr actually joins us, bless her heart. When I actually mentioned the fact that, yes, congratulations Sunderland, because they have now actually taken over the title that was previously held by Manchester City for the worst ever start to a Premier League season. City, of course, had 2 points from their first 10 games in 1995-1996. Sunderland managed that, but with a worse goal difference. And that suggests, of course, that if Sunderland follow the same pathway, they could be taken over by a mega-rich consortium, by loads of the world's best footballers, and lift the Premier League title in 2033-34. Just thought I'd share that.
I think people like Ian, Newcastle fans, I think they're all sitting there laughing now.
I occasionally laugh at what Alex says, yes.
just par for the course, really.
I emphasise at, not with.
Yeah. I'm surprised David Moyes does a job, to be honest.
Pardon?
I'm surprised David Moyes still has a job.
Well, I mean, I haven't followed him very closely, but he took over a club that's the lost key players. He's had very bad injuries.
But they had Sam Allardyce in charge. I mean, surely they must have been ethically sound from top to bottom. Mm. What has he done? Anyway, enough of the footballing side of things. We've still got one or two of John Wenham diary events to squeeze in. But we do have something we missed out for you last week, Ian, because time was so tight at that moment, which, of course, is your chance to reflect on the Camo from Nashville musical choice of Wednesday evening. So I know you're all set for the excitement of today, particularly as we are the day after the CMA Awards, which we'll be talking about in next week's Sound and Country Vision. Are you ready, Ian Lennox, for Stephanie Jones and Vamanos?
Yes.
I've been watching airplanes at a state license plate. They're all going someplace. There's a sunset somewhere.
Okay, we'll vamos, go. Dedicated, obviously, to Mexican builders, particularly if you're looking for a new wall next week. Anyway, I won't say anything else because, as I said, quite a shock to find that there is indeed an American election taking place. What did you make of Stephanie Jones and Vamanos, Ian Lennox?
I quite liked it. It's one of those songs that... I don't know, I've listened to so many songs through you on the telephone.
Yes.
That I just come to the conclusion, unless it's a really great song, you can't appreciate it. This isn't a great song, but at least it doesn't try to be something it isn't. And,
exactly.
And I think it's quite impressive.
And let's face it, that's what the whole musical cultural world is lacking. How does a song sound when it's played down the telephone line to you?
Just to me.
That's the message that we go for. As far as events are concerned, at the new Lincoln Theatre Royal next week, according to the wonderful John Wenham events diary from the 9th of November to Saturday the 12th of November, 7:30 p.m., nobody's perfect. Well, of course not. Tickets are from £18. Inquiries 01522519999. This is focusing on the fantastic tale, which goes something as follows. Love Is All Round is the name of a feminist publishing house where Harriet Copeland is running a competition to find new romantic fiction written by women only. Leonard Loftus is looking to get his books published, but Harriet keeps sending his manuscripts back because they are the work of a man. When Leonard finally sends a manuscript based on his experience as a single parent and uses the female pseudonym Myrtle Banbury, Harriet is impressed. She finds the writing superb and insists on meeting Myrtle so she can hand over the prize money and get Myrtle's signature on a contract in order to collect the money. Leonard is forced to carry on the pretense that Myrtle exists by dressing up as a woman and pretending that he is his own fictitious aunt. Hilarity will obviously ensue. Nobody's perfect at the new Lincoln Theatre Royal. Does it appeal to yourself, Ian? Have you ever felt the need to dress up as a different sort of soul, individual, go transgendered just to actually promote your books?
Not personally, but I do think it's a very attractive plot, and it opens all sorts of possibilities for comedy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Am I dead yet? I'm not asking in a rhetorical manner, but on the 11th of November, that's Friday, the 11th of November, 7:30 p.m. at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, death is no longer a moment. It is a process that can be reversed. Two friends talking and singing about what happens when we die, how we think about dying, and most importantly, how some of us might be brought back. A new show from Unlimited Theatre, inspired by research into contemporary developments in resuscitation and made in collaboration with emergency care professionals. That's all I have to say, really, because I'm not dead yet. Anyway, like, yeah, continue. It's outrageous. Ian, it's been sensational. It's actually been really good. So I feel as though we've managed to tick all the boxes that we were packed into that we didn't manage to tick last week, and that's been made the world a better place for me. Doubtless you'll be looking forward to another fine weekend of sporting offerings, but I feel we would be remiss in not getting the outrageous and disgruntled view of Ian Lennox if I didn't mention FIFA and poppies.
Oh, well, I'm very much of the same opinion as Theresa May.
And who would have thought that? Exactly. Who would have thought that? Exactly.
I just can't see how they even justify it as a political statement. It's not.
We need say no more, apart from the fact that it is a battle between Gordon Strachan and Gareth Southgate, two ex-Middlesbrough managers. Actually, I've just been reminded, telepathically, actually, John sent me this message. He sent the message through to me. Ian, Bangladesh, what happened to England? That collapse, 100 going okay, and then literally, I mean, what you know, you've written about cricket. What's going on over there? Please sort it out.
Well, I think England aren't able to play spin very well, and this kid, this 18-year-old lad, has come from nowhere. Looks like he could be developing into a really world-class player, and they just couldn't handle him, I don't think. And England, A, haven't got many good spinners since Swan retired. And B, aren't used to playing against them. Our wickets are basically designed to cater for medium fast to fast bowlers and the reverse swing and stuff. And both these pitches that they played on in the two tests were spinners' wickets.
And that, as they say, is that. Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Oh, yes, I had a lovely time.
Back again next week?
Yes, please.
That's all we need to say then. Bye bye, Ian.
See you later. Bye.